Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
And welcome back, everybody, to another edition of the Top Thunder Podcast. I'm your host, Dylan Hunsinger at Thunder Chats. We are part of the Believe Network. And yeah, guys, I mean, we're knee deep in draft coverage right now. I mean, we've had a lot of awesome guests giving different perspectives, and we had another awesome guest to give a new perspective, but, you know, life happens and he's not here. So you guys give me an Alex. You know, we've got a lot of things to talk about. The NBA finals are going on. There's a lot of NBA news and rumors going on, of course, more draft stuff, and we asked you guys for Twitter questions, and you guys delivered. We're going to get to that, but before we do that, I'm going to go to Alex here. Alex, for the first time tonight, how are you doing, sir?
Yeah, for the first time. I'm doing good. You know, had a little bit of technical difficulty there, but we're back. We're good. And just kind of, you know, I'm excited to just kind of talk NBA basketball. Like, we have been knee deep in draft coverage, but you know, the NBA is still going on. We got the finals, we got different things going on in the NBA. So, you know, it's good to kind of come on here and talk some draft coverage, but also talk a little bit of NBA.
Okay, well, the good thing is when you're knee deep, you can still see what's going on above water. So what's going on above water right now is the Warriors have officially tied it up with the Celtics 1-1 going back to Boston. The final score of 107-88. Now, I'm not going to go into as much detail as I did the first time, but the Celtics won what was a really closely contested game between the Warriors in game one. I mean, long story short, Curry went off in the first half. Tatum was not feeling it, and Boston's role players, specifically Peyton Pritchard, Derek White, and Thunder legend, the Milkman, Liveth, Al Horford.
There you go. Thunder legend, Al Horford.
Yeah, man. What did you think about that game, man?
So I was working from the office that game. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there's in my office there's a setup where there's like a big TV above my desk. And so, you know, I was watching the game on and off. And you know, it got to the third quarter and the Warriors started putting that run together where they got up by like, I think 11 or 14 points. Mm-hmm. And I was basically like, okay, this is over, because that's what the Warriors do. You know, they put together those third quarter runs. And then it's very difficult to come back on them. So I think I left the office early that day for whatever reason. And I came home and I was like, okay, let me turn on the game. I was expecting it to be kind of like tonight, where they were up by like, you know, they're pushing past and just up by like 20 by that point. Mm-hmm. And I turned it on with like 3 minutes left and the Celtics up by like 7. I'm like, what the hell? What, you know, where did this come from? So, I guess the Celtics did a very good job at the beginning of the fourth quarter. And so, you know, those guys, Peyton Pritchard, Derek White and Al Horford had a huge hand in that. So, you know, so much so that, you know, a lot of places had Al Horford as the front runner for Finals MVP, which, you know, that sounds a little bit weird when you're talking about a series that has Steph Curry and Jason Tatum and, you know, Jaylen Brown. But, you know, that's how it was first game. But this game, the Warriors put that third quarter run together and they did not let their foot off the gas.
Yeah. And, you know, as good as Al Horford was in game one, he very much came down to earth in game two.
Yes, he did.
He got swallowed up, only 4 shots attempted, 2 points, 8 rebounds.
Several turnovers.
Yeah, so, you know, Tatum, you know, he affected the game in different ways in game one, and then everybody else around him stepped up scoring the ball.
This time, Tatum was scoring the ball pretty well, not super efficiently, but pretty well. And the rest of his team did not step up. So they've got to find some common ground there.
How they say in the playoffs, you just want to win one on the road, and it's a series. So
they did. They did that. They did the hard part, man. So, yeah, I mean, either way, I mean, this is – it's shaping up to be a good series. I think both these teams match up pretty well. They've got enough offensive firepower on both sides. They're both disciplined defensive teams. And I think they're both really well coached. So, I'm excited to see, you know, the rest of this series. And, you know, I kind of gave my prediction on Twitter, but like I said, we haven't talked about it on the podcast or anything like that. But what was your prediction going into the series, and has it wavered?
No, so my prediction going into the series was Warriors in six. So I still see it that way. You know, like anytime you make a prediction like that, you know, both teams have to lose, you know, some, you know, a little bit in the series. Yeah. And so, you know, 1-1 heading back to Boston, you know, I see no reason why, you know, Golden State can't take one in Boston and then probably take the next two after that. So that's how I see the series going. I think experience is going to be a big factor later on in this series. Whenever, you know, things start to get a little bit tight, and, you know, Boston won that first game and it felt like a little bit of the pressure got off, but Warriors came right back. And they, you know, they mollywopped them a little bit in game two. So it's going to be interesting to see how Boston reacts to this. So I definitely think, you know, I definitely think it's going to be a series, but I do think Warriors and their experience ends up winning in six.
Yeah. And I've even said, like, I could see that very scenario happening. I think that if the Warriors do win, it will be in six games. But my official prediction, the one I'm going to stand by, is Boston in seven. I think that if it gets to seven, obviously, like in my scenario, Boston will be coming off of a win, because if the Warriors win in that scenario, you know, they win the finals. But Boston will be coming off of a win. They'll be going back to the Warriors because the Warriors have home court advantage. And, you know, I can see the Warriors getting a little bit – arrogant in that scenario, and I could see Boston just playing like absolutely balls to the wall hungry, like guys like Marcus Smart, Robert Williams, Tatum, Brown, Horford, like guys just basically wanting it more and willing themselves to a victory, and Ime Udoka like instilling that into them like pre-game. Like, you know, like go out there and fight like you've got nothing left to give, because this is the last game of the season. Yeah. Like, put it all out there and, you know, make yourself champion. And you know, I could definitely see them responding to that. So I'm sticking with Celtics in seven. But I mean, as a fan, I'm just hoping for a fun series.
Yeah. And I'm hoping, like, man, that Eastern Conference, even the Western Conference Finals, it was just like, game after game of like victories in the teens and in the 20s, like, you know, a team winning by 20, a team winning in the teens. It's like, it took a little bit out of the awesomeness that was these playoffs in the first two rounds. Like in the first two rounds, you know, you had close games, you know, you had great matchups. And then we thought heading into the conference finals that it's going to be a lot of the same thing, but it just seemed like every game, Even though the Eastern Conference Finals was a seven-game series, it seemed like every game was a 20-point victory. And that really isn't that fun when you watch it wanting closer games, wanting more more hotly contested games. And so I hope this series goes more the way of game one and not necessarily the way of game two.
Yeah.
As far as margin of victories in the games and closeness in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And you know, this series isn't starving for star power. You know, you've got Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown. I think some might even consider to be in the vein of a star. You got Steph Curry. But speaking of star players, there is one that expressed his, shall I say, reaction to a certain coach leaving. So, according to Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN, Quinn Snyder decided to depart from the Utah Jazz. And he said that in the aftermath of the departure, All-Star guard Donovan Mitchell is described as, quote, unsettled, unnerved, and wondering what it means for the franchise's future. So there's a little bit to unpack there. First of all, the Jazz losing Quinn Snyder. Quinn Snyder, the Thunder fans know Quinn Snyder. He absolutely put on a coaching masterclass against us in the playoffs.
Especially Donovan's rookie. Donovan Mitchell's rookie year.
Yeah, absolutely. And, like, you know, he's – I feel like he's one of the better offensive minds in all of the NBA. You know, just kind of finding a way to make Rudy Gobert work. Highlighting Donovan Mitchell, even as a rookie, playing alongside other guards like Ricky Rubio, a guy that, you know, is more of a playmaker, Mike Conley, a guy who – more of a playmaker, typically needs the ball in his hands. I feel like he's done good, you know, creating good offense for that team. So the Jazz is a division rival for the Thunder. So them losing their coach, like, right off the bat, you know, that's a W for us in the future, I feel like. And not only the coach, like, you know, like you mentioned on your Twitter, like, Donovan Mitchell's unsettled. He's unnerved. He's questioning the franchise's future. Even before this happened, people were speculating if the Jazz were going to try to, you know, blow it up, if they was going to try to give up Donovan Mitchell, see what they can get, maybe even give up Rudy Gobert, see what they can get. And you theorize that maybe it's time to just get rid of both.
Well, that was Giola. That was Thunder Moneyball, or he's the one that put that out there. He put it out there as far as Donovan Mitchell. But mm-hmm. my saying in that was, look, if you're going to go ahead and get rid of Mitchell but keep Gobert, that's going to raise the floor on any possible standings on that team. And so if you're going to go ahead and try to target 2023 and try to, you know, be as bad as possible for 2023, you have to trade both of them. And, like, I don't think a franchise wants to necessarily get rid – I don't think a franchise wants to dive into a rebuild before giving a new coach a chance.
Yeah.
And especially Utah. Like, Utah, again, is a small market just like us. And you don't necessarily want to do that until you finally run the course of that team. And I don't necessarily think that the Utah Jazz have run their course. You know, It's amazing to me that you lose Joe Ingles to an injury, and it just seems like that team just fell apart. And so I think they go back, they retool with whatever assets they have, and they try to come back next year and see what they can do under a new regime, under a new coach. But I don't necessarily think that right now is the time to completely blow that team up.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you talked about the Joe Ingles thing. It's eerily similar to how the Thunder team blew up whenever Andre Robertson went down. We was rolling, man. Like, we destroyed the Cavaliers, put up like 140 points at that point. We was up by like 30 points against the Pistons in that game. And then, you know, when he went down, we just never looked the same. Obviously on defense, but even not offensively. But yeah, you mentioned, you know, giving a rebuilding team, like, you know, before a team enters a rebuild, giving that coach a chance. And I think, you know, just look back at this year, the Boston Celtics. There was a lot of people that was questioning the fit between Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. Brad Stevens stepped down as the coach and moved into a front office role. They brought in Ime Udoka. And, you know, look at them now. They're in the finals. I'm not saying that, you know, a new head coach is just going to lead the Jazz to the finals year one, but, you know, it goes to show you that, you know, usually cooler heads prevail, and, you know, if you're patient and you find the right guy, it could pay off for you. So there's something to be said about that. Before we move on to the draft, you know, let me just ask you. So obviously Donovan Mitchell is kind of the hot name, and, you know, I mean, he's been rumored to the Knicks for all the obvious reasons. He's been rumored to the Heat, I guess, for Flight Hero and picks or whatever. Like, you know, there's a few different destinations for him. Where would you like to see Rudy Gobert go, realistically?
Ah, man. So I mean, so here's the thing. So one of the big things that you hear about in this draft is Charlotte. You know, Charlotte needing a big man, Charlotte needing a big man, and possibly being able to draft it like a Mark Williams at pick 13 or pick 15.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you want to go ahead and kind of like fast forward that LaMelo Ball, you know, that LaMelo Ball led team into, you know, into a better stratosphere as far as talent wise on the team, you know, a possibility could be like, you know, these two first round picks and maybe like a couple future first round picks for Rudy Gobert, which it makes sense to me. You know, if you want to go ahead and get a big man, why not get the premier defensive big man out there in the league?
Yeah. And, you know, you can send Gordon Hayward to match the contracts and maybe even like PJ Washington to sweeten the deal. So, yeah, I think it makes sense, man.
I mean, I think there's a lot of people were talking about like Dallas. I don't know, you know, I don't think Dallas, like here's the thing with Dallas, I think what they showed in this playoff run is that a James Harden like Luka led team can get you far in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it may not necessarily be able to, you know, to get you to the conference finals and get you to the finals, but I think that more that had to do more with like the talent around Luka and not necessarily that, you know, them needing a rim protector in the middle.
Yeah. No, I got you, man. Yeah, and I mean, shoot, that makes the Hornets like good. Like I think they make the playoffs like relatively easy. Cause I mean, you know, you look at what Clint Capella was able to do for Trey Mann and that young Hawks team. Like I think Trey Young. Yeah, God, that's Trey Mann.
Trey Mann.
I'm projecting my hopes on Trey Mann. But no, I think that Gobert's impact could be similar, if not even better, you know, for the Hornets. Mm-hmm. So, and if they're able to, you know, retain Miles Bridges, then yeah, they're kicking with gas, man. I like it.
And I mean, like, if you think about Utah, like Utah, you know, this year's pick went to Memphis, and then the 2024 pick goes to Oklahoma City. It's top 10 protected for 24 and 25, and then top 8 protected for 26. And then if it doesn't convey by 26, the obligation is extinguished because that's what happened in the Mine. How do you say his name? Oni Mine trade.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Earlier this year. So I mean they have future draft picks. They have their own future draft picks. So I mean, if you go ahead and trade Gobert and you trade Donovan Mitchell, I mean you can get yourself a haul, but you're not going to get yourself a Paul George like haul for either of those players. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what they do. It'll be interesting to see, you know, this is Danny Ainge took over last year as far as like, you know, president of basketball operations. And so it'll be a very, very interesting to see which way he goes. Cause this is basically going to be his first move as that at that position for Utah.
Yeah. And we'll likely hear about all the moves that could have happened. And instead, we'll just see Gobert and Mitchell on the Jazz again.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, so, you know, we're going to go into this draft and there's going to be a lot of talk about that. But I still think that Utah tries this, you know, this team with another coach just to see how it works.
Yeah. Hey, I see it, man. Well, I mean, let's move into the draft. And, you know, this is kind of a topic that you wanted to discuss. You know, we had Jake Fisher on the podcast on Friday. You know, you did a great job leading that interview. Dropped a lot of nuggets. You know, Thunder Twitter is running wild. One of the things that he said was that Jabari's camp believes that at this point he's going number one. And, you know, you could take that, you know, whatever way you want to, but you theorize that, you know, when it's all said and done, that this is kind of just posturing, that's Magic's trying to get leverage, get them to, you know, another team to try to maybe trade up to number one. But at the end of the day, you think that the Magic is probably going to take Chet. So you kind of wanted to talk us through this scenario. So I'm going to give the floor to you, sir.
Yeah, so my scenario kind of goes into it's way it's way too early in the process for it's way too early in the process. And there's no definitive, like, this is not LeBron. This is not, you know, this is not even Zion in that draft. You had to draft Zion number one. You know, I know Ja looks like the guy now, but in that draft, you had to draft Zion number one. The Anthony Davis draft, it was Anthony Davis for sure. And so, like, heading into this draft, I think number one, it's way too early in the process to be like, yeah, this is the guy we're gonna select. And I just think there's way too much. What's the word I'm looking for? There's way too much, like, certainty that Jabari is gonna go number one for it not to be for there not to be a possibility and a high possibility of posturing, of smoke screens, trying to get Oklahoma City maybe to move up, trying to get another team to move up. When in the end of the day, youth and the track record that GM in Orlando has from his days back in Milwaukee and the type of players that he selected, kind of like how what Jake Fisher talked about, you know, this is a guy that John Hammond, that he drafted Giannis extremely long, drafted John Henson, drafted Thon Maker, drafted Larry Sanders. You know, these are all 6'11", 6', you know, 7' guys, extremely long wingspans. And so he has a certain type of player that he goes after. And Chet fits that mold 100%. And so it would not surprise me one bit if whenever Adam Silver steps up to the podium and says, you know, the Orlando Magic select, the name that comes after that is Chet Holmgren. So my thing is, you know, we as Thunder Nation, as fans of the Thunder, have kind of like said, okay, Chet's going to be our guy. Chet's number two. But if Chet isn't there, who are we going to select? And so I'm thinking, my thought has always been, you know, he's number one on my board is Paolo Banchero, not necessarily Jabari Smith. And Jabari Smith, he would fit perfectly on this team. But his ceiling is a lot lower, I believe, than say the possibility of a Jason Tatum like player in Paolo Banchero. His floor is a lot higher. So, you know, shooting is always going to be a needed skill in the game, and defense is always going to be a needed skill in the game. And Jabari Smith has those. But I do think that Jabari Smith's offensive limitations as a playmaker do limit how far he can become in the NBA. Like, he's just going to be a play finisher. He's not necessarily going to be a play creator. And so that, you know, that was my thing. You know, if Chet goes number one, who do the Thunder select? You know, when they first got into it thinking that they were going to get Chet and then that's it. So, you know, I've always said Paolo over Jabari. You know, I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, you know, over the past couple of weeks after looking into it, I've kind of reshuffled my board and I've moved Chet back to number one. And
oh, really?
Yeah, and I don't know if you got a chance to check out my article that I wrote this past week, but I said, you know, I reinforced the idea that, you know, if Chet's still on the board when the Thunder pick, that he's probably going to be the pick. You know, the article was Chet, you betcha, despite all the noise, you know, referring to the Jaden Ivey thing and all that stuff, the sound pick remains Chet Holmgren at two. And that's with the caveat that he's still on the board. And I was looking for this quote at the end of the podcast, and I searched heaven and earth. I talked to all of our guests again to be like, hey, was you the one that said this? And as I was waiting for the response, I was going back and listening to, you know, each guest talk about Chet. And the more I listened, man, like, just like read between the lines, not even, you know, what you see on tape, because what you see on tape is what you see on tape. Like, the dude is extremely efficient scorer. He's a guy that is extremely versatile in the offensive and defensive end of the ball. But, you know, what you hear from those guys talking, like, you know, Albert and Rucker, who went and saw Chet personally, like, dude, this isn't a guy that's going through like big man drills. Like, he's doing like drills that KD does before the game, and he's he's sinking these jumpers with ease, like off 1 foot, off the dribble, off the catch, you know, at the top of the key, the wing, like 5 feet behind the line, like all this stuff. And then the quote that I was trying to find, finally, Rucker was the one that said it. And he told me what Scout said it. So I know that it's like legit. I'm not going to, you know, spoil it for him. But he said that he reached out to the scout and was asking about his frame. And the scout, for one, said, when you worry about the frame, that's when you get fired.
Yeah.
And he's like, so, okay, well, you know, that's cool. And then he was like, and he said, I'll tell you this, though. When I went over there to FIBA, I was overseas at one of their practices. I pulled Jaden Ivey aside and was like, hey, who's the guy out here? Who's the leader? Like, who's the dude out here? And he's like, Chet. And it's not even close. And Jaden Ivey, a competitor, a guy that you've seen him play basketball. Yeah, absolute alpha. You like, you know how competitive he is. For him to say that, like, at the drop of a hat, like, not even thinking, not even, like, I want to say myself. Like, I mean, that speaks volumes to me. But, you know, this question isn't about Chet. I just wanted to get all that out there. Like, that's so, why I moved Chet back
just
up to the top.
And just for the record, if Chet is available at 2,
yeah,
I'm okay with that. I'm good with that. You know, it's not like, oh, we should have gone for Paolo. No. If Chet's there, like, honestly, Chet is the guy that I want, and Paolo is the guy that I dream of on the Thunder. Like, it would be awesome to see like a front court scorer like Paolo Banchero on the Thunder. But Chet, if everything works out and if he shows this thing that, like everybody says, he wasn't able to showcase in Gonzaga, hell yeah, give me that dude. Give me that dude 100%.
Yeah.
But yeah, so continue on.
Yeah, well, before I move on to Paolo and Jabari, I just got to say, I was talking to this dude on Twitter today. It was like, I saw what he did against Jalen Duren, and Jalen Duren dogged him.
Gosh,
I'm like, dude, like, I think we was watching two different games because, A, Chet outproduced him statistically. He had 9 points, 9 rebounds, and 4 blocks compared to Jalen Duren's 7.7 rebounds and 1 block on worse efficiency on less shots, mind you. Yes, Jalen Duren did, you know, put a shoulder in him, and Chet flopped, by the way. Like, he didn't get knocked down. He flopped. Yeah. He was trying to get a charge, and then Jalen Duren dunked it. Cool. Made for a highlight. If you watch the rest of the game, Chet was not scared of Duren. He was not affected by Duren. He blocked him at the rim one time. He hit him with the moves, the fadeaways. Like, Chet was in full control of that contest. So don't bring Jalen Duren up to me when you're trying to discredit Chet, because I will roast you on the internet. So, anyways. But like I said, this isn't about Chet. I was just justifying why I moved him to the top, because I was with you and I had Paolo number one for so long. That being said, Paolo is my number two and Jabari is my number three. But I feel better about Jabari now than I did a couple weeks ago when Jabari was, I think, my number four at that time. And actually, the person that kind of gave me a new perspective on that was Mikel Ibarra of Down to Dunk and OKC Dream Team. I think he was talking to John Hamm about Jabari, and he was like, you know, they said all the things like, you know, he can't create for himself, can't create for others. The ball stops when it gets to him. And Mikel's thing was, there's another guy in the league who plays great defense. The ball stops when it gets to him, and he's still extremely effective, and he's a killer. And that's Kawhi Leonard. And, you know, that's not to say that Jabari Smith's going to be Kawhi Leonard, because, I mean, hey, let's face it, Jabari's probably a better shooter than Kawhi Leonard, but he's probably not as good of a defender as Kawhi Leonard. He's not, you know, he doesn't have the it factor like Kawhi Leonard does at this point in time. But that kind of opened my eyes to what he can be offensively. And then you also just go back to, he doesn't have KD Johnson. He doesn't have Wendell Green not creating for him at Auburn. He has Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Josh Giddey, like one of the top five passers in the league, creating his offense for him. So, again, like, yeah, if Jabari is on this team, he fits seamlessly. I think he could reach his ceiling easier on this team than a lot of other teams for that reason. And then Paolo, you know, like I said, like a broken record, Paolo is an offensive superstar. Like, he can score at all three levels. He's probably one of the best playmakers in the draft, not just at the top. Like, in the draft, he's one of the best playmakers. the question is and always will be his defense and his motor. And, you know, as I've said in my defense of Paolo, like, if he came to OKC, I have no doubt that Mark Dendelt's going to hold him accountable. I have no doubt that, you know, he can be an adequate defender, a serviceable defender, if you will. I don't ever think he's going to be Jason Tatum level is now, because Jason Tatum is like an elite defender at this point in its time, but I think he could be serviceable. The motor thing and the attitude thing is what makes me question if the Thunder would even want to bring him in the building, because as we said over and over again, the Thunder draft people, not players. And I'm not saying Paolo's a bad kid or anything like that, but I know the Thunder value hustle, heart, like, you know, stuff like that. Like Russell Westbrook.
Yeah, hard work. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you know, things that embody, and Presti said this, like things that embody our city, things that embody our community. Like,
yeah. And when they talk about Russell Westbrook, it wasn't necessarily that he wowed them at like a workout or anything. He was at the workout 30 minutes before he had to be there. And whenever they asked him about it, you know, he said something along the lines of, you know, if you're not early, you're late type thing. Mm-hmm. And so that type of stuff kind of resonates with the people versus player type thing. So continue on. Like, I get exactly what you're saying, like, as far as, you know, what Sam Presti likes to draft.
Yeah, like, I'd be ecstatic if we got any of these three players. Like, even if we got Jaden Ivey, I'd be like, huh? But I'd be excited. Jaden Ivey is an exciting basketball player. I think that he has star potential. Mm-hmm. But, you know, whatever happens in this draft, like, I'm cool with. But, like, for those reasons, if Chet's off the board, I could very easily see Jabari Smith Jr. being the pick at two.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. Yeah, I could definitely see that. And I would be okay with it. Here's the beautiful thing about picking two in a four-player draft is you're going to get a good player.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the beautiful thing about it. That's why we celebrated so much whenever our card came up after the commercial break and whenever our card came up after the fourth place team and after the third, you know, the third team. You know, being number one, being number two, like, in essence, the Thunder control this draft with all their assets, with their cap space from last year that they can still use in this draft.
Mm-hmm.
They completely control this draft. It's going to be up to Presti to put everything together and come out very successful from this draft. But this is going to be probably one of the only drafts that the Thunder completely have the ability to control because of all their assets, because of three picks in the first round and where two of those picks are slotted. And then the ability to have that last pick in the first round and then the fourth pick of the second round. That's extremely valuable if you know, pair them together or even on their own. And so Presti's going to, you know, it is our hope that at midnight on the 23rd, going into the 24th, we look back at this draft and we're like, damn, Presti did work, and this is going to be exciting, you know, heading forward.
Yeah, Presti did his thing, man. We trusted the Presti, and he pulled through. I like it. I need to see it.
Yes, definitely.
All right, so let me ask you this. So I'm saying that I think that if Chet's off the board, they take Jabari. Who do you think they take?
I also think they take Jabari, just because of the fit and just because of, you know, the players that we already have in tow as far as the two building blocks for this team in SGA and Giddey.
Mm-hmm.
And so you already have your creators. You don't need another creator. So if you can get a play finisher, you know, probably the best play finisher for that combination of players that we already have is probably an outside shooter, probably somebody that, you know, like a Jabari. So I do think that Jabari is probably the best fit. I just, you know, scoring points wins games. And I know defense also does, don't get me wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have, like, here's the thing, like, Dagnall and his staff do a great job of getting a team defensively to a certain point. Like, you can have great defenders or whatever, but last year's team, I know it went off a cliff there at the end, but for most of the season, they were in the top 10, top 12 defensively. And that's very difficult to do because with this team, I think, because individually, I don't think you have a lot of great defenders on this team.
Yeah.
You have Kenrich, you have Lu Dort. And honestly, that's about it as far as great defenders.
They did a lot of it with Dort hurt, too.
Yeah, exactly. They did a lot of it with Dort hurt. And so, you know, that means that the scheme, the defensive scheme of this team, the defensive discipline of this team is very good.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you bring on Banchero, I'm not at all worried about defensively. Like, I don't think Banchero's a sieve. I don't think he's just, you know, he's a matador that's just going to be Olaying everybody by him.
Yeah.
You know, and I think within the constructs of the team, he'll do fine defensively. Like, he won't be that weak link out there. And so, you know, having somebody out there that could possibly give you another 20-point scorer out there, like, you want to talk about opening things up for Shea. If you have another offensive threat out there, like, Shea's going to explode, I think. Like, that's the one thing he has never had outside of, like, the Chris Paul year. But he, you know, as far as how he played himself, he wasn't there at the level that he is now. And so if you're able to have another 20-point scoring threat out there, I think Shea's game is going to explode, man. He's going to be, like, 28, 29 points per game, I think. Especially with Giddy out there kind of finding holes, finding openings. So that's what I think with Paolo. That's why I'm so high on him on this team. But I understand Jabari and I understand Chet. And for the most part, I kind of see a vision where Ivy works too. I just don't think that Ivy will be able to meet his utmost potential here in Oklahoma mm-hmm. City. And it may turn into another Durant, Westbrook, Harden type situation where Harden would never reach the mountaintop that he reached on his own with, you know, Durant and Westbrook.
Yeah. And, you know, before we close out on that, this discussion, kind of talking about the whole defense thing, at NBA_University put out a tweet. Like, if you're not following NBA University, like, follow them. They're great. They put out a lot of good stuff, but they put out a tweet about the toughest and easiest defensive matchup difficulties based on some data they've collected over the season. On the difficult side, Lu Dort was number 6 behind guys like Isaac Okoro, Herb Jones, Dorian Finney-Smith, Dylan Brooks, and DeAndre Hunter. And then on the easiest matchups, number 1 and number 2 was Oleksii Pokuševski and Josh Kidd.
Yeah, man. Like, but I mean, the fact that still, with all that,
yeah,
Thunder as a team were where they were at
with those two playing and Dort not play.
Exactly. Like, I mean, it just shows you, like, the scheme, the defensive scheme that Dagnall brings to the table works.
Yep. Nah, I'm with it, man.
And one more thing. I know everybody's on this. I know everybody's on this whole Paolo Banchero doesn't like Oklahoma City bit because of that little interview that he did in 2020. Listen, money talks. Regardless of anything else, money talks. And if Paolo Banchero gets drafted by the Thunder, number one, the Thunder front office is going to do their due diligence. That's number one.
Yeah.
They're going to ask those questions in interviews and things like that. But number two, if they do draft him, you know, it's not going to be – this guy is not going to sabotage his career in order to sabotage the Thunder, in order to stick it to him for taking the Sonics. Like, I need Thunder fandom. I need Thunder Twitter to kind of calm down with that video. It happened when he was in high school. When we were all in high school, we said things that we probably regret to this point, or said things that honestly were just bad in bad taste. And so, you know, if he gets here, that means the team did their due diligence and he's good to go. And then that doesn't mean that if Seattle gets a team, he's going to bolt the first second he gets. This is not going to be a KD situation or anything like that. So I kind of want to just go ahead and put those to rest and get that out there.
It would be the ultimate sleeper cell, though, for that to
happen. Oh, my gosh, yes. It would, yes.
Just like, I hate the Thunder. I will tear them apart from the inside.
Like, the Save Our Sonics guys bred this guy in a, you know, in a test tube. And boom, Paolo Banchero is what we got. And he's going to get on the Thunder and destroy it from the inside.
It's like, have you seen the movie Salt with Angelina Jolie?
I have not.
Oh my gosh, dude, go watch that movie. It's so good. Okay, I'll use a different one. So basically, it's like Jason Bourne. It's just like, just activate like a sleeper agent, and he's like, oh, okay, it's time to just fully sabotage this.
Completely. In four years, you know, Sam Presti's going to get on the phone and be like, Olympus has fallen, Olympus has fallen, as, you know, Paolo Banchero destroying the Thunder from within.
It's like, give me a top 55 protected second for this guy. Get him out of here. And then he goes and he's an all-star. And it's like, Presti did it again.
So it's not going to happen, guys.
Yeah. Well, speaking of somebody that is intriguing defensively for the Thunder fans, also in our interview with Jake Fisher, he dropped that a name that's been linked to the Thunder, spread like wildfire around the combine, and to quote unquote take with a grain of salt, because it did spread like wildfire at the combine, Jeremy Sochan.
Yo boy. Yo boy.
And
as Jake Fisher said, Jeremy Sochan.
Oh god, yes. Yes. And hang on, I'm gonna go back to the messages here so I can see exactly what happened. So I was talking to Alex because I was at work. And he was doing this interview, and I was trying to, you know, help him figure out the Zoom thing because we have different passwords and stuff. And, you know, about 12:30 hit, knew we had him for about 20 minutes, and I messaged him and was like, "There, you know, any luck?" And he's like, "Yeah, it's in the Dropbox for good." I was like, "Cool. Anything juicy?" And he said, "Sochan is definitely on the Thunder's target." The first thing I said was, "I'm going to cry." But... 100%. I said, I'm going to cry. And, you know, I played into it on Twitter. I won't lie. I played into it on Twitter because, you know, I wanted, you know, more people to, you know, come to the podcast and check it out. But I think the very fact that it spread like wildfire and that it happened so fast tells me that we're probably not looking to trade up for Jeremy Sochan and probably not even targeting Jeremy Sochan at this point.
No, I mean, it's okay. It's like I said in the Jake Fish interview, like the Thunder have gotten so good at doing smoke screens that the Thunder can actually be like, yes, we're going to do this, and nobody will believe them.
Yep.
Nobody will believe them at all, and they'll think it's another smoke screen. And so the Thunder's secrecy has actually helped them to be able to tell people what they're going to do and nobody believed them. They are literally the crying wolf team in the league. You know, nobody believes what they say. And so if we're hearing buzz already that, oh yeah, you know, the Thunder are really looking at Jeremy Sochan, I really don't think that he may be the guy. I don't think they're going to try to move up to get him. I believe if he's there at 12, they'll grab him if it's somebody that they really want. But I do think that there's a lot of gamesmanship going on, and I do think that the Thunder are probably trying to get somebody to bite at Sochan so that they can pick up, or somebody can fall that they think is in that same position, maybe falls down to them. Maybe it's Adrian Griffin, you know, maybe it's Johnny Davis. I don't know, but they're playing the game.
Yeah, no, and I said this on Twitter. Like, if Sochan falls to 12 and we take him, yeah, I'm going to be annoyed. People are going to laugh at me. But at the end of the day, I don't care that much. If we trade up for Jeremy Sochan, I stand by this. I'm deactivating my Twitter. It's not going to be for a long time, but for a couple days, that puppy's going to be deactivated because
the amount of not necessarily hate mail, but like ha-ha DMs that you're going to be getting are going to be enormous.
It'll be St. Peter's beating Kentucky times 12.
Yes, there you go.
RIP my mentions. So, Yeah, no, I will be very, like, I know we say trust to Presti. My trust will be very questioned at that point in time if we trade up, if we give assets to trade up for Jeremy Sochan. And the worst part about it is, you know, we'll be doing this live, and so we'll get the notification the Oklahoma City Thunder have traded up to 10, 9, 8, 7, whatever, and we're getting excited. Like, oh, AJ Griffin, Shaedon Sharpe might have fallen, Benedict Mathurin. Does he believe in Dyson Daniels? Then he takes Jeremy Sochan, and I just chuck my phone out the window. Or no, first I deactivate Twitter and then chuck my phone out the window because you let my hype build up for that, Presti. So, that's all I got to say. But, no, I think we're good. I think we're safe on that front. So, I'm happy. But it's like,
and I'm okay with Sochan, man. Like, yeah. Can you imagine a Sochan, Holmgren, Dort lineup out there? Like, you can win games scoring just 85 points with those three guys out there.
Yeah, it'd be fun defensively. And, you know, it's like I saw somebody did a edit where they put Chet's head on Poku and then they put Sohan's head on Baisley, and it was Poku passing to Baisley. I think Moles was the one that sent it in the chat, and I just put a bunch of brick emojis because that's all I see. That's all I see, man. So, I'm kind of playing into a little bit of the hate of Sochan, but, like, the shooting very much does concern me.
And it does. It does. And not just shooting from three, like, his free throw shooting.
Yes. Like, he could be a liability in the offensive end. And, like, I said it a million times.
That just brings up shades of Andre Robertson over and over again.
Yeah, and let me say this. When I say that, I don't mean they play the same type. I'm not saying Andre Robertson is a player comparison for Jeremy Sochan. I mean players in that archetype that are studs defensively and liabilities offensively. That is what I mean. I am tired of those players. I want – it's like who was it I had on the – I think it was Alex, the last pod we had, Draft Film School. I was like, I want to surround Shea with shooters. I want him to have shooters on the wing. I want the bigs to be shooters. Mm-hmm. I want shooters on the bench. I want the coach to be able to shoot. I want the rest to be able to shoot. Like, I just want them everywhere. And if you draft Jeremy Sochan, you're just not doing that. So
that's and you're not like, okay, so he's not Andre Robertson, but, you know, let's look at Philadelphia and look at Matisse Thybul. Like, Matisse Thybul 2 years ago, like, everybody was like,
all defensive team.
This was a steal in the draft. You know, 2 years later, this guy cannot be played on the floor. Not even in the playoffs. He didn't have a big time role in the season because of the fact that he never developed his offensive game. Mm-hmm. Great defensively, don't get me wrong, but he was never able to develop his offensive game. And so if you in this generation of the NBA, if you only play on one side of the floor, you're gonna get played off the floor.
Yeah.
So those guys, definitely there's red flags when it comes to those guys. And the Thunder and this new iteration of what they're trying to do and the type of players that they're drafting, the type of players that they're bringing onto the team, Jeremy Sochan does not necessarily fit the mold of those types of players. So
yeah.
I'll say that.
Yeah. And, like, you know, before we move on into our questions here, you know, a guy that I've been, like, very like bolstering on the timeline, Usman Zhang, hashtag Jane Gang, hashtag UseKC. You know, he has similar questions about his shooting, but he's been called the best passer in this draft. And, you know, he's shown the ability to not only catch and shoot, like, you know, everybody likes to throw out, like, oh, Jeremy Sochan shot 36% on catch and shoot threes. Like, Zhang showed the ability to do that, but he's also shown the ability to do so off the bounce as well, off the dribble, step backs. Like, he's shown the ability to do more on the offensive end. And, yeah, he's not as big as Sochan. Yeah, he's not as good defensively as of right now, but the dude's got some broad shoulders. And if you look at the first half of the season to the second half of the season, he's a quick learner. That tells me he's coachable. That tells me he's a hard worker. Like, it just keeps adding to the list of why Presti is just I have the hardest time believing Presti won't fall in love with Usman Zhang as a prospect.
And many times whenever somebody many times whenever you look at somebody's first half of the season and second half of the season, and they improve immensely in the second half, what that tells me is that they had the initial talent in the beginning. They just had to adjust to the speed of the game and everything. Mm-hmm. You know, same thing with Usman Jang, same thing with Malachi Branham. You know, one of the biggest things that we've heard about him is that after those first 10 to 12 games of Ohio State season, he took off because that talent was already there. And Dyson Daniels, same thing. And then who's the third? Who's the last guy I'm thinking about? What's his name? Hardy.
Jaden Hardy, yeah.
Jaden Hardy, yeah. Like, you know, he had a horrible start to his Ignite season. And then that second half of the Ignite season, he started to kind of look different. You know, he started to be able to play make a little bit more. He started, you know, so he got used to the speed of the game. And so what that tells me a lot of times with those types of players is that they had the talent initially coming in. They just had to adjust to that, either the new league or they had to adjust to the speed of the game or whatever. And once they adjusted, their talent started to show. And so those types of players, like those are the type of players that I look at and I'm like, hey, at 12, I could definitely see Jang. I could see Hardy. Like I've watched film on Hardy and there's a lot to like about him. Now, does he play like Trey Mann? He does play a little bit like Trey Mann, which would be redundant, but you know, there is a lot to like.
Yeah, no, I just have the dream of trading up from 30, like into like the 20s and getting Jaden Hardy and just having Trey Mann and Jaden Hardy just tear people up off the bench.
And they would. They really would.
Yeah, for sure. And, God, I lost my whole train of thought. So mad now. Okay, never mind. We'll get back to it eventually, I'm sure. Alex, do we have mid-roll this week?
We do have a mid-roll.
So, okay, awesome.
Yes.
Well, hey, guys, take time to listen to this mid-roll. And when we come back, we will answer your Twitter questions.
Incurring debt is one of the staples of adulthood. Believe me, I know. You know, from the start of, you know, going to college, moving out of your house, starting your own family, all that leads to incurring debt. And paying down debt can be very stressful. You know, because basically everything has to go right. You have to find other forms of income, other flows of income to try to go ahead and bring that down. And it's very difficult to do. You know, you sometimes you start to juggle multiple credit cards, multiple payment dates, and it can be very arduous. But if you're tired of juggling due dates, consolidating with a personal loan could be your answer. That way you'll have just one due date a month, and Credit Karma can help you find the best option for you. Credit Karma uses credit data to find loan offers that are personalized to you, so you can have a better idea of what loan amount you can get approved for. Credit Karma will even show you your chances of approval, so you can choose between loan offers that you're more likely to get approved for and apply with more confidence. Comparing loan offers on Credit Karma is 100% free. It won't affect your credit scores, and you could save money in the process. Are you ready to apply? Head over to creditkarma.com/loan offers to see personalized offers. Again, that's creditkarma.com/loan offers to find the loan for you. That's creditkarma.com/loan offers. Credit Karma. Apply with more confidence today.
And we're back from the break. And during that break, the train of thought found its way back
epiphany,
on the tracks.
The epiphany bubble showed up on Dylan's head.
Yeah. So, you know, you're talking about guys that, you know, improve throughout the season, how the second half they take a leap. You know, it just takes them time to kind of get their feet under them and adjust to the speed of the game. And look no further than our star player, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, in his freshman year at Kentucky. As I've told you guys many times before, he was coming off the bench for the first few games at Kentucky. Like, he was coming off the bench for Quade Green. And as he adjusted to the speed of the game, as he got more opportunities with the ball in his hand, everything that I heard, like, you know, through like the practice reports and stuff, like, he was a dog in practice. Like, he was one of the hardest workers. You know, he was giving it his all. And as that, you know, went on throughout the year, he was able to, you know, not only grab that starting position, but he became like the head guy, like over Kevin Knox, who was a top five recruit at that point in time. Like, it's laughable at this point, but you know, he was a top five recruit. He's supposed to be our best player. And Shea became our guy, and not only our guy, he became a lottery pick. And, you know, you talk about guys that improved throughout the year, like, look no further than our head player. And you can't tell me Presti doesn't value that type of player. You can't tell me Presti doesn't value a hard worker, because you drafted Russell Westbrook because of the reasons that you said earlier. And when he brought Shea in, like, he told the story in the exit interviews about, you know, Shea being in the gym shooting, like, as soon as he came in, like, talking about the work ethic and the drive to be better. Like, that's something Presti values. So, yeah, absolutely, man. And that's my Usman Jang. That's my ode to Usman Jang for the day. So we will.
Jang game,
baby. We're rolling deep. Let's see here. I'm going to pull up our tweet with our Twitter questions. You guys are super clutch. We only put this out like.
You guys are awesome.
About 2 hours ago, and you guys came in and showed out with a few questions. So we're going to take the time to answer those as we close
and
out.
And as far as the Paolo and Jabari question, I believe we answered that and, you know,
talked about that extensively.
Yes, we did. And that was at KeenXM. So Key, you know, threw down the gauntlet on that one and gave us our first question. So good job, Key.
Yeah, shout out Key. Key's always giving us good questions. He hopped in on the draft lottery spaces. Key's a homie, so appreciate it, Key. All right, let's move into another this or that question. This one comes from Zach Segrist 1. And he says, pretty simply, Jaden Ivey or Shaedon Sharpe? And I'm going to let you start this out here, Alex.
So, you know, if you have listened to any of our earlier, you know, draft coverage when it comes to, you know, doing our big boards and things like that, you know, I had moved Shaedon Sharpe up to, I believe it was 3, right?
I had him there too as well.
I had moved him up to 3, and you know, many things have come out since then. Number one, you know, like his handlers are a little bit annoying. That's number one.
I could have told you that.
Yeah. Number two, the lack of tape. Just, you know, as we've gone through this draft process, there have been guys that have come into the draft process, whether it's a combine, whether it's workouts or whatever, and have shown out. And we haven't heard the same thing coming from either scouts or media members in regards to Sharpe. And so, you know, a lot of, you know, they've been talking about there's a lot of weaknesses. There's some weaknesses in his game that, because there's not a lot of tape and a lot of film, was hidden. But through more research has become a little bit apparent as far as like his first step or lack thereof of a first step and his inability to kind of get into the lane that well. So at this point, I would say that Jaden Ivey has a pretty significant lead on Shaedon Sharpe.
Yeah, I mean, and that's pretty easily consensus. I mean, at this point in time, if I was looking at my big board as I pull that up, I know that I had Shaedon drop. I dropped him to 6 from 3, and I moved Ivey up from 5 to 4. And yeah. You know, I mean, as we both mentioned, we've kind of warmed up to the idea of Jaden Ivey, and we would be excited if we used to draft him. Now, I think the answer is Ivey, but I do want to talk about this because when we had Alex Draft Film School on this past week, I asked him the question, you know, at this point, with all the negative feedback that's been coming out about Shaedon Sharpe and how he handled the whole situation, how there's no film, how he hasn't played full speed basketball in over a year. Is there a shot that he could fall to 12? And, you know, we went back and forth on it a couple of times. I think that, you know, we settled that it's kind of hard to see him falling out of like the 10-ish range. Like, he would be shocked if he made it past the Wizards at 10 at that point. But the fact we was able to have a conversation about it tells you how far this guy's stock has fallen. Fall is not a word. Just so you guys know, words are hard sometimes, as I put in the Jake Fisher substantial. No, yeah. God, so stupid. And at that point, like, I'd already typed it up. I was sitting at somebody's house, like, ready to make the delivery. I was like, I can't, like, go through this again. I'm just going to say, I'm just going to own up to it. It was me. I'm the idiot. It's me. But, yeah, no, I think I'm going Ivy, but Sharp still very much intrigues me. And if there was a shot that you could get Chet Holmgren and Shaedon Sharpe in this draft, that would be a home run, in my
opinion. Oh, yeah, definitely. And, I mean, look, I mean, we talk about move-up targets, you know, trade-up target. If you're able to get up to 10 and Shaedon Sharpe is there, you make that move as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
To try to get up to 10. You know, you do the whole, like, trading Mitchich. A couple draft picks, and you just move up to 10, and you're good to go.
All right. Topher asks, is the Chet Jabari tweets about each team a smokescreen to who is picking them? I guess he's referring to what Fisher said about Jabari. Maybe he's referring to what Gavoni said about Chet being thrilled to end up on the Thunder.
I think it was more, I think – Jabari put something on Instagram today, and like Chumo Kiki and some other players kind of like hyped it up or whatever. That, you know, and then the Josh Giddey, Chet Holmgren thing on Instagram a couple weeks ago. I bet that's what he's talking about.
Sliding his DMs late at night with the UP text.
So, I wouldn't read too much into that. Like, these guys are all connected. And I don't think Chumo Kiki or Josh Giddey have direct access to the brain trust of each of their respective teams to be like, yeah, we're going to get this guy, or no, we're not going to get this guy. So, you know, I would just say it's playful banter with guys that could possibly be their teammates in a couple days. But yeah, I wouldn't read too much into it.
All right. Graham Wheely asks, how many picks would it take, and would we do it, to move up to 1 while keeping pick 2 as well for a 1-2 lockout for this year draft? So basically, what would you give up to give up 1 and 2? I mean, to get number 1 as well as keep number 2.
I think the question is, what would Orlando take?
And then what would you give up?
And then what would you give up?
Yeah.
So, I mean, so definitely to move up to get number 1 without giving up number 2, you're probably definitely giving up everything other than 2 in this draft. And you're probably giving up your own pick unprotected for the next year, for 23. And then probably a pick swap for 24. Like, if I'm Orlando, that's what I'm starting with.
Yeah.
Because number 1 picks are extremely valuable, and there's no guarantee that you're going to be at number 1 next year. You know, so, yeah, that's what I would ask for. And as far as the Thunder go, I would not do it.
Yeah, I'm hard passing on that as well. I mean, not just Victor Wembanyama and Scoot Henderson. Like, there's so much talent in the 2023 draft in the lottery. Like, you're going to get a good player out of the lottery in the draft. And, you know, that's where we expect to be, is the lottery. Not only that, we have 3 other picks coming into the draft as well. You know, they're not projected lottery picks, but, you know, you'd be able to potentially package those picks to consolidate to move up towards the lottery, or maybe even to the bottom of the lottery. So, yeah, I'm chilling, man. I think that the fact that we got number 2, we shouldn't get greedy. And, you know, like, it's like you said, like, there's not like a generational, like, can't miss prospect in this draft class right now. If there was, maybe it's a different story, but there's not. So
it's like Presti said, you got to go ahead and kind of keep yourself from pushing the button. So that's definitely
push that freaking button.
Yeah, that's definitely a push the button type move.
We got a few more here. Let's go to this one. Let's talk a little bit about our roster crunch. So at MVP Giddy 69, nice, says, what do you think we will do with Maladone, Krejci, and Jerome this offseason? Who will we keep slash let go of? And I'm just going to say, I think all three of them have maybe beat less than the other two. I think Ty and Teo are gone. And
yeah, I agree with
it's
that.
Possible Veet's gone on off also.
Yeah, I could definitely see those guys gone. You know, when you talk about a roster crunch and you talk about possibly bringing in four guys, you know, four rookies, you know, we had a full roster heading into the offseason with nobody necessarily being an unrestricted free agent. So, you know, looking at guys like Isaiah Roby, guys like Teo Maladon, who has a team option. Let's see. Ty Jerome, he doesn't have a team option because they picked it up last year. But he could easily be traded. You know, you could package a second-round pick, a late second-round pick, and just easily, you know, trade him into somebody else's space. And so, yeah, whenever – there's going to be guys from last year's team that won't be here on this team next year. Yeah, you know, that's a definite. And so, you know, that's why I think the draft is not just going to be a place for us to get new players, but it's going to be a place for us to wheel and deal some of the players that we have on the current roster to other teams. And so I could definitely see Derek Favors not being here anymore. After the draft or after this offseason. So, yeah, there's definitely a roster crunch and there's definitely guys that will not be here next year, especially if we select four new players in the draft.
Yeah, for sure. And, yeah, we didn't even mention as I got into the mic. Oh, God. Okay. Anyways, we didn't even mention.
Great podcasting right there.
I know. I'm listen, man. Nova's been doing this thing the past couple nights where he just wakes up at like 3:30, 4 a.m., not screaming, crying, just like every like couple minutes, just and then he'll stop and then he'll do it again. And so, like, for the last like few nights, I've got up at like 4 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning. Yeah, it's. It's absolutely terrible. So, because Chelsea can't go back to sleep as fast as I can. Like, I go back to sleep, but, like, it's a process. So, yeah, I'm tired, guys. I'm sorry. But, no, like, we didn't even mention Derek Favors, who Jake Fisher mentioned also in the podcast that, you know, we knew Kendrick Williams loved to do in OKC. He wants to retire in OKC. What we didn't know is that Derek Favors genuinely loves being part of the Oklahoma City Thunder. You know, we heard him say, you know, he's happy. He likes what they're seeing going on here. But, like, it didn't sound super genuine. It sounded just kind of like player speak, for lack of a better term. But to hear, like, that's the news around the league, like, he genuinely likes it, is interesting. Now, you can't just keep anybody that says, no, I love
being here.
Like, oh, dang, we can't trade him now. Like, heads are going to roll this up.
The Oklahoma City Thunder finished dead last in the league again. But – every player on the roster everybody's loves being happy. There.
Yeah. The things that matter, right? So, yeah, no, heads are going to roll, but I did think that was interesting. But, yeah, like, you know, we have four picks. Whether we use all four of them, you know, it's up for debate. But you're at least bringing in two players.
Yeah.
And you don't have any free agents on this team. Heads are going to roll. That's all I got to say. Prepare yourself.
Prepare for blood.
Yeah. let's go back to the draft for a second. At Never Been Equal asks, who's the biggest sleeper of the draft?
Biggest sleeper of the draft.
Yeah, I got one if you need a second.
Go ahead.
We go Keegan Murray, man.
Yeah.
I think people are sleeping on him at the top. Now, it looks like the Detroit might not be sleeping on him. There was a report from – oh, God, who said it? I can't remember. I saw the report on Twitter. I'm sure you could find it if you just searched Keegan Murray and Detroit Pistons. But there was a report on Twitter that people around the league feel like the Pistons would take Keegan Murray at number 5 over a guy like Shaedon Sharpe, Brendan Mathurin, Dyson Daniels, anything like that. Mm-hmm. But I mean, we've heard it from a million draft guys. Keegan Murray has the highest floor in this draft. And, you know, you hear that and it's like, okay, he has a really low ceiling. No, it's not that. His floor is just really high. Like, he's a prospect that's going to come in. He's going to be professional.
He's not going to bust.
No. He's going to play for his team. He's going to do what's asked for him. You know, he played a role coming off the bench as a freshman. He played a role being a star this year as a sophomore. He can hit. He's a legitimate three-level scorer. He's long. He's athletic. He's a smart player. He plays really good defense. Like, people are sleeping on him. Like, I saw, you know, Thunder fans like saying they just want nothing to do with him. Like, no, if he falls to like 8 or 9, I'm trying to move up and grabbing him.
Yeah, so, definitely, man.
Yeah, I'm going Keegan Murray.
So, kind of in that same vein, as far as players that were initially projected to go, so, you know, go high, I think AJ Griffin is being slept on.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you have a guy that's a, you know, over 40% 3-point shooter.
45%.
Like, exactly, 45%. Like, you hear somebody shooting that well, like, you would go ahead and boost him up to the top. And I think, you know, I think the whole talk about his knees and things like that, but again, in the top 5, yeah, you know, those teams don't want a player like that with that much risk. But if you're picking at 12, that's wonderful. That's great. Give me a guy that shoots 45% on a team that needs shooting, and I'll take those risks. I'll take that risk, especially with the 12th pick.
Yeah. No, absolutely, man. If Griffin falls at 12, like, I'm Jane Gang till I die, but take AJ Griffin. Like, he's got higher potential. Like, he's a great shooter. Yeah. And, you know, there's a lot of, like, hullabaloo about his athleticism or lack thereof because of his injury. Like, I don't know if you saw his workouts, man. Like, yeah, they're workouts, but he's still got to jump high to do what he's doing. Like, he looks athletic. Like, he looks very athletic. Now, maybe I haven't seen the tape of, like, his prime athleticism in high school, but, like, he still looks like one of the best athletes in this draft class, so – I mean, if he falls at 12, I'm ecstatic. Like, if you get Chet Holmgren and AJ Griffin out of this draft, like, it's a home run, man. Like,
yeah,
forget about it. I guess in the true nature of sleeper in this draft, I can't even say him because he's kind of been rising up boards. I think you could say Jaden Hardy. I think that's a fair sleeper because, you know, he was a guy that projected a top 5 pick going into the year. And obviously he, you know, kind of fell off a little bit. And, you know, there's some mocks to have him going in the second round, which if that happens and Presti doesn't take him, I'll fight him. But, you know, I mean, he's a first-round talent. Like, we've had many talent evaluators come on the pod. Albert had him, I think, number 8. Simon Rath at Hawks Draft Nerd had him number 6 on his board. Like, there's still people that believe in that, you know, see a path to success. So, yeah, I like Hardy. And also, like – let me just give some love to this guy because I didn't get to talk a lot about Kentucky in the draft class this year because Shaedon Sharpe is a hoe. Ty Washington, man. People are sleeping on Ty Washington.
Did you say Shaedon Sharpe is a hoe?
Yeah, he's an absolute hoe. He is a garden tool. No, Ty Washington, man. Like, I get it. Like, the end of the year was rough. The tournament was rough. The SEC tournament was rough. But what a lot of people don't realize, going into that Auburn game when we was the number 4 team, or no, I think we was the number one team at that point. I don't know. I know we was, like, both top 5 at that point. But going into that game, Kentucky was clicking on all cylinders. Ty was killing people. Like, absolutely just murking them. As a legitimate 3-level scorer, just slicing up defenses. he gets hurt against Auburn. He tries to come back early, gets hurt again, tries to come back early again, gets hurt again, tries to come back, doesn't get hurt, but you could tell he's not the same player. Yeah. And he even said as much after the season, like, I was playing hurt, tried to come back early. I didn't want to let my team down. I wanted to compete. And you have to admire that in some sense. And, you know, if it's in the NBA season, you know, he probably shuts it down. But this is a guy that's literally like a three-level scorer. He's a 6'3 point guard. He's got super long arms. He gets after it defensively. And he was playing out of position all year long. He's a true point guard. But when he came to Kentucky, that's what he wanted to be. But then we had the SEC leader in assists for the past two seasons, a transfer to Kentucky. So you don't say no to those type of players. And because of that, that guy couldn't shoot. Ty could. He had to play off ball a little bit more. When he had the chance to be a point guard, the one game he got to start at point guard, he had 17 assists and no turnovers. You could say what you want about the competition. You could say what you want about it being a one-game sample size. For you to have 17 assists and no turnovers, you have to know a little bit about being a point guard. So don't sleep on Ty Washington. I think it was Matt Babcock said on Draft Deeper podcast that the news out of the combine was he doesn't see Ty getting out of the lottery. So maybe some people aren't sleeping on him, but
maybe they're not.
Most are. All right.
You definitely aren't.
No, I've woke up. I don't want him on the Thunder because obvious reasons, but I do think he'll be
good. I mean, Teo Maledon won't be here anymore.
Yeah, but Jaden Hardy will. All right. Let's move on to Darkwing_Duck5. Imagine it's 2027. OKC just defeated the Supersonics for the championship. Paolo kisses the Larry O'Brien and through happy tears, yells, "I love OKC." Who else is in OKC starting five? So,
my gosh, really? That's where this question went.
Yeah.
Who else is in the starting five in 2027?
Yeah. So in this scenario, Paolo is number two. So Alex, I mean, you can answer it however you want to answer it.
I mean, well, hell, give me Shea, Giddy.
Yes.
Let's see. Jeremy Sochan is the defensive anchor.
Oh, God. You had me in the first half. I'm not going to lie.
I mean, this is so difficult. So this is so difficult of a question. Like, okay, give me those three.
Mm-hmm.
Give me LeBron James.
Oh, God. Okay.
Bronny's on the bench.
And then Paolo.
No. So I probably need a center, right?
Well,
so,
I mean,
give me.
So Paolo's kissing the trophy off the bench? I'm confused about your lineup.
Oh, wow. I mean, okay, I see what you're saying because they play the same position. But LeBron can play any position out there. Like, LeBron can play point guard. He can play three. He can play four. So, okay, here we go. Boom. Here we go. All right. Point guard, Giddy. Shooting guard, SGA. Small forward, I'm going to go ahead and put Paolo at small forward. LeBron, I'm going to put him at four. And then making the most amazing 360 of an NBA player ever.
Oh, Lord.
Got Kevin Durant playing center, winning the title in Oklahoma City to completely reverse anything that has happened in the past.
Let me tell you, if Paolo's kissing the trophy and we have KD on the team and LeBron on the team, he must have dropped a good, like, 40-piece, like, in the finals. To get finals MVP. But
that's hilarious. 2027, how old is LeBron now? He's 38?
I think so, yeah.
So 2027, he'll be what? That's 5 years from now. He'll be
43.
KD will be, what, 42, 41? Yeah, that's not happening. But still, hey, if we're going to go ahead and make imagination part of the podcast, let's go ahead and go with that.
All right, I'm going with Shea and Giddy, Usman Jang.
Playing small ball center?
No. He's playing three. I guess I got Paolo at four, obligatory. And then
Christian Koloko.
No, we got Victor Wembanyama. That's the only way this happens. Because, you know, you get Paolo, but you get Usman Jang. Usman Jang's not completely ready to contribute right now. He's still a little bit of a project. Helps us tank just enough to get the number one pick the next year, get Victor Wembanyama in 2023. And, you know, he isn't saying this is our first chip. He's just saying that we beat the Seattle Supersonics for the championship. So this is the three-peat.
That must have been a hell of an expansion draft for Seattle.
Yeah.
For them to make it all the way to the finals, probably in the first two or three seasons of their existence. So
pretty quickly. Very quickly. And they were led by Lugans Dort. Oh, God. All right. I think we got one more question on Twitter, and then I got a question for you. So, at Alex_BowlerJack asks, why NBA content? How did you fall in love with it? And I guess he means just like, you know, our coverage of the NBA, of the Thunder. So, I'll let you get into it first, Alex. How'd you get into all this?
I mean, so I've always been a fan of the NBA, especially, you know, starting off with Michael Jordan Bulls back in the 90s. And then, you know, of course, when Oklahoma City got the Hornets due to Katrina, Hurricane Katrina, I fell in love with it at another level because it was more civic than just fandom. You know, it was, you know, you're there representing your state, representing Oklahoma City. And so it adds a little bit to it. And so I would be on this message board. Back in the day when message boards were real popular, and it was a Hornets message board. And so I got on there and I started getting, you know, real good with, you know, people talking with them and kind of forming a community before Twitter kind of became a real big thing, and started to write on that website as far as their front page. And then just, you know, ventured off and started my own website, which was, you know, now it's thunderbasketball.com. And then eventually I was like, I see everybody else doing a podcast. Let me go ahead and try to do a podcast. So I did it with Anthony, with my brother-in-law. Mm-hmm. We had the MTTB podcast. And then eventually, you know, we turned into Topic Thunder. And so as far as NBA content, I love the NBA. And, you know, it's the most exciting league, I think, out there. Like, I know a lot of people love football. I'm just not into football like that. So basketball it is for me, man. And I love it. And I love the fact that, you know, I think I'm finally starting to get a foothold as far as, you know, being in the media for the Thunder and, and doing like the, you know, I used to be to where I had to ask for every game that I went to. And last year I got a full season media access, and I'm pretty sure I can get full season media access from here on out. And so, yeah, so that's, you know, that's the reason why I do this. And that's the reason why I love it. You know, I actually got an invite to a pre-screening for Seeds of Greenwood. It's this kind of mashup between the Thunder and like the city of Tulsa, Greenwood, you know, Black Wall Street, all that. And they made a video, a movie about you know, the 100 years since then, and what the Thunder are doing to kind of help the community of Tulsa and help Oklahoma, you know, Oklahoma as a whole, especially in those underrepresented populations. And so on Thursday, I'm going to go ahead and, you know, watch the screening of that over at the Harkins by the downtown Oklahoma City, and just, you know, things like that, just enjoying things like that and just having the opportunity to watch those types of things where it's not necessarily basketball related, but it is related to the team. And it's related to the community as a whole. And so that melding of those types of things just really interests me and just really, you know, I just love it. I just love doing this.
Yeah. So what you heard there is Alex is going to Hollywood, guys. So just saying that. No, man, no, that's awesome. Yeah, I mean, then, you know, your hard work's been paying off, man. Like, you know, like you said, you've been grinding. Before I get into all that, like, you were a guest on my podcast and, you know, we connected, and, you know, I've seen all the hard work you put in, you know, on this podcast, and all obviously, you know, through your media and grinding. And, you know, a lot of people have said on Twitter, like, you know, you conducted that interview with Jake Fisher like a pro, regardless of what you said was a flub up at the end. That was not a flub up at the end. It was great. So yeah, man, I'm super, super stoked for you. And all
we are we are our own harshest critics.
Oh, absolutely. There I go. I say absolutely. I say you know about 100 times. Let me tell you, if you're playing a drinking game with absolutely, you might get drunk.
You're going to end up dead. No, not drunk. Dead.
No. You'll get drunk if you're playing with absolutely. If you're playing it with you know, you're going to die. You're going to get alcohol poisoning. You're going to die. So that's all I got to say. No, as far as my end, you know, obviously I live in Kentucky. I'm a huge Kentucky fan, as I've said a million times. I'm not going to get into the whole semantics. Okay, I guess, you know, I got into sports late because my dad worked third shifts. I didn't really get, like, into sports until, like, middle school. And, you know, I got a friend who was really into it. And so, like, when I'm into something, I'm, like, super into it. So, Allen Iverson was the guy that made me fall in love with basketball. I was like, that dude's awesome. He's so cool, like – talks trash and he backs it up. He does things that like you don't see a lot of people do on the basketball court. And like he's short, like, you know, I relate to him because at that point, like, I was short too. So really love that Allen Iverson, everything stuff where I followed him as Sixers, followed him in the Nuggets, when he went to the Pistons, the Grizzlies for a cup of coffee, and then back to the Sixers. And after he retired from the Sixers, I was like, you know, I don't really have an affinity for any of these teams. I don't really like any of them. I just like Iverson, you know, as I followed Allen Iverson through the league. So I was like, I got to find another team to watch. And it was around that time that the Thunder were competing in the playoffs as the 8 seed against the number 1 seed Lakers. And, you know, took them to, I believe it was 6 games. And, you know, it was their first year in the playoffs. And, you know, being a Kentucky fan, like, I'm – a sucker for a passionate fan base, like, you know, you Kentucky's a passionate fan base, so seeing the Thunder fans, you know, give them a standing ovation even after, you know, being eliminated from the playoffs, like, I was really, really fond of that. But also, like, just seeing the young core, you know, Russell Westbrook specifically, obviously Kevin Durant, James Harden, but Russell Westbrook, like, had me from jump, like, just how hard he was competing, going right at Kobe Bryant, like taking contested jumpers and making them, like, you know, big moments, you know, coming out of this dude. And, like, you know, from there, like, I was hooked. Like, and also I liked the idea that they were something new. Like, you know, they were, I could kind of grow with this team, and I have, you know. So as far as like covering it goes, you know, I got into Reddit just randomly, and you know, it was around trade deadline, so I was posting fake trades. I was commenting on fake trades. And this dude just messaged me. He's like, hey, I like your takes. You should make a podcast. I'm like, well, I don't really know the first thing about making a podcast. He's like, it's easy. Use this app. So I used the app, made a podcast, posted on Reddit. It got a lot of plays. So I did it again. It kept getting a lot of plays. I was like, okay, you know, maybe I could do something with this. And I made a Twitter for it and, you know, started Thunder Chats. And I did a lot of podcasts, and I had guys like Andrew on. That's where I met Maddie. It's where I met you. It's where I met Dolan. You know, had a lot of people on. And then eventually, you know, we decided to, you know, start Topic Thunder, me, you, Steven, Moles, and Anthony. And, you know, eventually brought on Tierney and Jerry, eventually brought on Connor. And, you know, we've just kind of been growing this thing from jump. And like, as far as like writing, I never thought about being a writer. Like, I failed every English class that I took in college. Like, it's a part of the reason, like, I dropped out of college, because I, you know, the whole MLA format, all that crap. Like, I never liked writing for the structure of writing. Like, I enjoyed writing about things I liked, but, like, you know, stuff that I didn't care about, I couldn't make myself care about it. And so Alex was actually the first person that, you know, reached out to me and asked me if I ever had interest in writing. I was like, yeah, man, I don't know. And I wrote something, you know, same thing. Like, it got traction, it got play, you know, people liked my style, and it's just something that I've tried to continue doing. And, you know, like I said, I love the Thunder. I love this team. I love them when they're competing. I love it when they're rebuilding. So, you know, I want to cover them in every asset I can. So, and here we are, man, you know, talking about the draft from the midnight on a Sunday evening, Monday morning for me now, it's 12:01. So, yeah, yep. I mean, that's just a testament, man. You know, that's my team. You know, grew up.
It's not work when you love it.
Absolutely. Even though I'm super tired because of Nova. But, yeah, that's my spiel. And before we close out, Alex, I want to ask you this question because it's a question I've asked all of our guests, and I want to ask all the guys, but, you know, I have you on, so I'm going to ask you now. If we were to keep picks 2, 12, 30, and 34, what is your ideal player combination?
So, I mean, give me Chet with number 2.
Yeah.
Give me Adrian Griffin, number 12. At number 30, you know, there's so many guys at 30 that you can, like, I would love, like you said, Hardy to fall at 30. He's not going to, but I would love, you know, for him to fail a marijuana test, you know, the day before the draft and fall down to 30.
Yeah.
But it's not going to happen. So at 30, I mean, I wouldn't mind Jake Moravia. I think he's going to go a little bit higher. I would not mind, you know, the whole Caleb Houston thing at 30. I don't necessarily like. I think Caleb Houston's a little bit too slow. Okay, I'm just rambling. So give me, give me Koloko at 30.
Okay.
And then give me Prashida at 34 and stash Prashida.
I like it. Yeah, I got Chet at the top. I think if we had number one, I would want Chet at this point.
Mm-hmm.
At 12, you know, AJ Griffin was who I was going to say there because I do think there's legitimately a shot that he falls. Although Alex said that if he's there at 11, the Knicks don't take them, that he might disown them as a franchise. But it's cool. The Thunder is West team, so we'll welcome them with open arms. But that's who I was going to say. But for the sake of being different than you and for the sake of pushing the agenda, I'm going with the Jang Gang, Uskesi Ujmanjang. At 30, this is where I like Max Christie. And, you know, I've talked about, you know, everybody likes to point out that the Thunder promised Caleb Houston, or, you know, Caleb Houston had pulled his name out of the draft. He must have a promise. Thunder gets promises. Thunder's taking Caleb Houston. Max Christie did the same thing. And I like Max Christie's fit the Thunder better than I do Caleb Houston. So,
yeah,
I'd like Max Christie. And you know, like his shooting numbers weren't great this year. Like, you know, he kind of struggled adjusting to the game. He didn't have a great team around him, but he's a pure shooter. Like, he can set the nets on fire. And if you haven't checked it out, Tyler Metcalf at No Ceilings, friend of the pod, put an article out about Max Christie's defense. And it's impressive stuff. So go check that out. And then at 34, yeah, I'm right there with you. I'm not even going to differ. Like, Gabriella Perchita, if he's still there at 34, it's a crime, and you have to jump all over that because that man's going to be a monster.
Yeah.
So.
Definitely.
I'm right there with you, man.
At 30, I mean, another guy that I could possibly see is taking or that I would enjoy taking is Galantari.
Yeah. Yeah, he's got a lot of Dyson Daniels in this game.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right.
For half the price.
Yeah. All right, I'm going to close with this. If you were to move up from 30 to 34, so somewhere in between 13 and 30, or 13 and 29, because you're moving up from 30. If you was going to move up somewhere in there, who is the player you're targeting?
Hardy.
Just period?
Yeah, Hardy. Yeah.
Yeah. I like Jaden Hardy, too. I feel like that he would be a good player to target. But the guy that I want is Jalen Williams. I'm so intrigued by him, man. Like, he's a Presti player. Like, you know, a lot of the same ways that Ujmanjang is a Presti player, Jalen Williams is as well. Because, you know, obviously the guys in No Ceilings have been hyping him up, but they posted a video of he had a drive in one game and – he had three defenders collapse in on him and just live dribble, left hand, flipped it to the right wing underneath the goal. Like, just an absolutely beautiful pass. Like, he's a really good playmaker. He can shoot. He's 6'6" with a 7'2" wingspan. Super athletic. Like, he's I would love Jalen Williams. Like, he was a guy that I was hoping would fall to 30, but after he just tore up the combine with the measurements, the testing, the actual like scrimmages, he might go lottery. So yeah, I like Jalen Williams. I stand by my dream is to do Chet and then somehow trade 12 and maybe 30 for 13 or 15 to the Hornets. They get Duren or Williams, and then we get Jang and Jalen Williams, and I'm like, all right, I'm chilling.
I mean, that's just like I'm telling you, man. Like, again, the Thunder control this draft, and so a move like that, I could definitely see that happening. I could see them saying, hey, we're gonna take Mark Williams or Jalen Duren at 12. Like, if Duren falls and he's there at 12,
yeah,
and the Hornets really, really want Duren. I could see them like strong arming the Hornets and saying, look, we'll give you 30, we'll give you 12, you give us 13, 15, and we'll call it a day.
Yep. And I mean, hey, even if we got to throw in 34, I'm down. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm with it, man. So I'm excited about this draft. I think there's a lot of people that sleep on this draft. I think that there's a lot of prospects that I like and I think would help the Thunder. Now and long term. So
yes, 100%.
For the sake of me not rambling, I think we're gonna put an end to this podcast. It was good, man. You know, it was an impromptu little action, but you know, I think we provided a lot of different perspective and some good content. So first of all, I want to thank you for taking time out of your Sunday evening to come on the podcast, and once again just commend you for the awesome interview that you had with Jake on Friday.
Hey, man, anything for the unit.
Yes, sir. The unit's strong. So follow Alex at AlexRoy_NBA.
Yeah.
Okay. Just make sure I did that right. I'm always
follow Dylan at ThunderChats.
At THUNDERCHATS, as I used to like to say. So, yeah, definitely follow us. Follow us on Twitter if you are not at OKC Topic Thunder. You know, we're going to try to be a lot more active in the coming weeks on that. So that's something that I've been trying to discipline myself on and not just use my Twitter like a selfish moron. So, yeah, definitely keep an eye out for that. And, you know, this week, Wednesday, Maxwell Bombach of No Ceilings is going to be coming on the pod, give his perspective on the prospects. And then Saturday, we're going to have a huge mock draft podcast with the No Ceilings crew. Unclear which No Ceilings members are going to be on there, but I know it's going to be more than one. There's going to be more than one of us, and we're going to be talking mock draft. There's going to be a lot of insight and different opinions and perspectives in that. So definitely keep your eye out for that. That's going to be a fun pod. Always a good time with the No Ceilings guys. So with that being said, hope you guys have a great night. God bless. Hoop when you can. And as always, Thunder up!
Thunder up!
That was way louder than I expected. That was my bad. I think I might have fucked
up. Well, it sounded like Mickey Mouse.
Thank you for listening to the Topic Thunder podcast. Our podcast is available to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, and Google Play, or anywhere else you listen to your podcast. Be sure to leave us a 5-star rating and a positive review, and follow us on Twitter at OKC Topic Thunder.
Thunder up!
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.